Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
Last month, Congressman Mac Thornberry, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, rolled out his latest proposal for defense acquisition reform, focusing on modular, open systems and separating large platforms from their technological components. But some defense analysts believe those changes ignore the fundamental problems in the DoD acquisition system. Matthew Fay is one of those critics. He's a foreign and defense policy analyst at the Niskanen Center, a libertarian think tank. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
There's nothing wrong with incrementalism. I think Congressman Thornberry actually deserves a lot of credit, both for trying to tackle a complicated issue. Acquisition reform is not an easy issue to tackle, so he deserves credit for that. And I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with the incremental approach itself. I think the part of the problem with acquisition reform in general is that it tends to focus on the technical and managerial aspects of acquisition, and these are important. These are and you can certainly improve management aspects. Frank Kendall over at the Pentagon has done a good job of that with his Better Buying Power series. But acquisition is still a political activity, and I think that focusing on the politics of acquisition is where we should be looking for acquisition reform. And Thornberry sidesteps that a little bit in his reform proposal so far. And unless you get the politics right, the managerial and technical reforms can only take you so far.
And by politics, I think you're mostly referring to internal Pentagon bureaucratic politics rather than Hill politics, right?
Yes. I mean, Hill politics obviously are involved. We can never get those out of the way, can we? But yeah, it's definitely bureaucratic politics within the building, dealing with everything from the various Pentagon agencies involved, but mostly with the military services and their interests involved. And they really start the ball rolling on the acquisition front. So it's what their political interests are involved and how they go about pursuing them is a very important aspect of acquisition outcomes.
So let's get more specific. I mean, you have sort of a three-pronged diagnosis of what you think the actual problems in the acquisition system are, and you write in your op-ed that the Thornberry proposal might actually make some of those worse. So walk us through those three issues and why the Thornberry proposal doesn't address them in your view.
Well, the first one, I think on the modularity front, my colleague Josh Hampson has actually written about this on our blog at the Niskanen Center, modularity is a good thing. I think that Congressman Thornberry wanting to incentivize that is also a good thing, but mandating it replacing one all or nothing approach with another one adds a level of complexity to the to acquisition that we already see it as a very complex process. There are very different technical requirements for modularity than there are for a program that's not modular. So you're adding in a technical element that might drive up costs later in the process. I think the most important thing deals with the requirements front, and this gets really at the political question that we're discussing, because it's the military services that are in charge of the requirements phase. Now, Congressman Thornberry does try to address this in the latest proposal in the Acquisitions Agility Act, but he basically still leaves it in the hands of the military services without necessarily adding any accountability to that. Now, the services are going to and should define their requirements for their programs. The question is, how do you maintain accountability over that? The Congressman's proposal has the service chief certifying it for the service secretary before going on to the Joint Requirements Oversight Council. But the problem is the services tend to like requirements that are very technologically advanced. They tend to want technology that pushes the envelope, not just state-of-the-art now, not just state-of-the-art 5 years from now, state-of-the-art 10 years from now. So they want something, in some cases, that is immature technology, in some cases, doesn't really exist yet. And the incentive is for them to push for this, and there isn't necessarily a check on this, particularly when there's things like bureaucratic log rolling involved. When the services want to pursue something, there isn't really anybody there to say no, or that doesn't seem like a good idea, or that doesn't seem feasible, especially as you get into these various joint capability approval stages, because if it's the other services that have to sign off on it within the bureaucracy, there isn't really an incentive for them to say, no, we don't think that's a good idea, or we don't think that's feasible, because they might be in the same situation where there's an advanced capability they want to put on one of their programs as a requirement. They don't want one of their fellow services to turn around and say, wait, no, that's not a good idea. So the incentive is for everybody to just continue to go along, to get along. And then if the technology doesn't develop in down the road in the way that it's projected to, that's where you see delays, you see cost increases, and that's where the system tends to break down. So it's really about what goes into it more. Like I said, the technical and managerial aspects during the process are important, but the politics that precede it really are what get the ball rolling.
Right. And back on your point about accountability for requirements, I think the Army's been really the most forward-leaning in terms of implementing last year's reforms, including by sort of revitalizing the Army Requirements Board and having the chief and the vice chief chair those. And they've been very clear in public that the chief and the vice chief are the only two people who set Army requirements. And I guess I wonder, from your perspective, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I could sort of argue it either way. Either you've got sort of a buck stops here situation set up there, but on the other hand, I guess maybe you run the risk that you've got the boss up there saying, who is not strictly a technical person, saying, I want this thing to go a million miles an hour, whether that's feasible or not.
Yeah, I know. General Milley's been very forward-leaning on this. I think the desire is there to fix the project, and I do think that they really... I think in their minds they want the program to work, and he's talked about it. They've got a pistol that they've been trying to decide on for 9 years, so he wants to take control of the process. And I think that's perfectly fine, and I think that having them have authority is a good thing. I don't necessarily think that authority translates to accountability, though. I think you really need somebody outside of the process because, organizations are self-interested. As much as our military is a very selfless organization in many aspects, it's also a bureaucracy in many aspects. And bureaucracies act often, not always, but often in a self-interested manner. So even if he believes that he is making the right decision, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is the right decision. So I understand why he wants that authority, but I think you need somebody outside of that. And I think you need somebody within OSD to be able to have authority over their decision-making as well. Because at a certain point, things need to be cut off. We don't see a lot of programs canceled. It's not to say that no programs are canceled, but there are. We don't see, once a program starts, it becomes very difficult to cancel because there's so many interests involved. So many people have something at stake in it. So you would need somebody, even if it's not canceled, I think that once a program starts going awry, you need somebody outside of it to be able to step in. That's very difficult, especially because it's not just necessarily the Army who can stand up and say, no, I don't want you involved in my program. Again, if you see bureaucratic log rolling between the services, and they can present a unified front to protect their programs, then it's much more difficult for a civilian overseer to step in and actually either stop the program or to try to get it back on track.
Let me finish up by circling back to your point on modularity, because one of the points that I've heard the House Armed Services folks make a bunch of times now is that, every element of DOD talks a good game about modular open systems architecture, but nobody actually does it. And so the only way you're going to get there is by mandating that they at least have a plan on each individual system. Because if you leave it as optional, nobody's actually going to do it. And that's what history shows. So just want you to take on that argument if you could.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I have nothing against modularity in and of itself. I think there's been a lot of people who have recommended it just as a way of dealing. I mean, we don't know how technology is going to develop. We don't know what strategic needs might be in as these programs come online when they take a decade or two sometimes. So I think modularity is a good thing, and I get where the Armed Services Committee and where Congressman Thornberry are coming from on that and why they would want that to be a feature. I worry about it mandating across the board. Now, you're right that people will talk a good game and say that, yes, we're going to. I think that, but I do worry that if you try and make every program modular, you're just going to increase the level of complexity without necessarily getting what you want as the outcome. I think instead you need to provide some kind of incentive for it instead of actually just mandating it. Come up with a way of making it within their best interest to do it instead of saying that you must do this because we're telling you to. I'm not sure exactly what that incentive would be, but I think that's a better way of going about it than making it a requirement from the get-go.
Matthew Fay, a foreign and defense policy analyst at the Niskanen Center, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. We'll post a link to the op-ed he co-wrote critiquing the Thornberry defense reform proposal at federalnewsradio.com. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages.
Listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Services contract reform has been on the Defense Department's to-do list for quite some time now. The latest gambit came in January when the Pentagon released new instructions for how it wanted DoD agencies to change the way they handle service buys. But getting it done, that's the hard part. A top Pentagon contracting official says it'll take more than a decade before everything's in place. More now from Federal News Radio, Scott Massioni.
Services contracts make up more than half the Defense Department's procurement budget, and those services are contracted for everything from IT consulting to cooking in the commissaries. But services contracts haven't been so great in the past. In fact, they've been on the Government Accountability's Office high-risk list since 1992. According to GAO, in the past, DoD has not had a cohesive, standardized strategy for dealing with services contracts, or a way to categorize them. DoD's trying to change its bad rap on services contracts, though. In January, it issued new guidance on how it will approach those contracts. But that doesn't mean the change will come fast. Ken Brennan, DoD's Deputy Director of Service Acquisition, says it may be 12 more years before the policy is fully implemented. Here's Brennan at a Professional Services Council event in Arlington, Virginia.
Implementation is at many different points along, the vision. I really look at this as probably a 15-year effort that we're about 3 years into. My goal is that services becomes less of a standalone and just part of the general culture and policy. We'll see if I'm successful on that, but I think that the MILDEFs are doing real well on implementation, and even some of the Fourth Estates have been working this, especially the larger ones. Some of the smaller ones, it's new to them, so they're going to continue on. And they actually are, some of them will ride the coattails of the people that support them, depending on which organization they're aligned with. So they're doing pretty good. There's a lot of room for growth yet. It's going to be a decade at least.
The instruction DoD released in January made services acquisition more portfolio-focused and gave military acquisition chiefs more power over services contracts. The instruction creates expert positions that preside over each of the services sectors. Those experts, or functional domain experts, will provide strategic management to improve planning, execution, and reduce costs. The experts will also put processes in place to monitor post-award performance, identify best practices, develop metrics, and make policy recommendations. Here's DoD's Director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Strategy, Claire Grady, during a speech in December to explain more.
If you have a functional domain expert, you have somebody who oversees a portfolio of services, who has unique insights and can develop unique insights into that particular segment of the market. That person can look cross-cutting across the department and look at opportunities created by redundancies, look at best practices, look at what metrics make sense for that particular functional domain. One size does not fit all in metrics. Just because it's a service instead of a product does not mean the same metrics are going to be relevant to what you're looking at in that particular marketplace. Doesn't mean you have the same behaviors or market structure just because you're a service. So looking at a functional domain expert to have that cross-cutting look across community feel to how we're buying services is a critical part of how we're tackling these.
According to Brennan, the Air Force has adapted most easily to the new services acquisition requirements. He says what's most important is that DoD is not backsliding, especially with small business. But while Brennan says it will take a long time for DoD to transform its services contracting, Alan Shabotkin, Executive Vice President at the Professional Services Council, says that's too long.
I hope it doesn't take 15 years to memorialize this. The nature of services changes a lot. We don't quite follow Moore's Law. I don't think we're changing every 18 months. But services offerings that are the marketplace is putting on the table, the pace of change in the commercial marketplace and coming into government really needs to move much more quickly to provide a process for that. And I'm just concerned that it'll take way too long. See what we can do to accelerate it, if at all possible.
Despite the long timeline, Brennan says more changes could be coming in the future, especially for small businesses and DoD. Brennan says there's room for collaboration, especially in the administrative services realm. Here's Brennan again.
We know based on our spend analysis that we do a lot of smaller transactions. We know based on our market research that the large businesses in this arena historically do not do business with the Department of Defense. And we also recognize that the market and the requirement are aligned very geographically and have a huge small business footprint. So when you put those three things together, I'm actually contemplating and working through the potential development. I don't want to get too far out ahead of this. It's not endorsed, it's not through the decision process, but the kinds of things I'm thinking about are issuing a policy guidance memo that says, hey, if you're going for admin, you really ought to be going only small business, it ought to be local, and it ought to likely be a set-aside or within the small business rules. We'll see how that goes. That's the kind of thing that would definitely go out for public comment, I'm sure, but that's the kind of mindset that I'm thinking through.
Brennan says he has no timeline for that guidance and doesn't even know if it will come out. But he said he would most likely get small business input and possibly post it on the Federal Register before making it a rule. Brennan says the guidance or rule could be something as vanilla as asking contracting officers to consider doing something, or as strong as actually mandating the use of small businesses. In Washington, Scott Massioni, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.